Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 116, John Dugan. John, a.k.a. the Resale Rabbit, is his YouTube channel that he goes by. And what I really enjoyed about this interview was, you know, the understanding that, you know, while it looks great being out on the road all that time, it does get old. It gets to be a project, a job. John spent 300 nights in a hotel room last year. Imagine it. Out of 365, 300 nights were in a hotel room. He drove 49,000 miles last year. Now, he's a young guy. He can handle that. But I think it's a great perspective. He's taken the next probably 6 months off to get a wholesale operation running. He's got a warehouse really going at it heavy. But I love the fact that he plans on going back out. So, you know, it's what's interesting to me about sellers like this is that they figure one thing out, they put a process in place, they make it work, and then they move on and move up, I would say, in their business. And we talk about that. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest, I think a good portion of my audience will have heard of John Dugan, a.k.a. Resale Rabbit. He goes by on YouTube. And he is he's a nomad. I mean, he has been traveling the country, and I can't wait to hear, you know, about some of the escapades and some of the things that he's seen. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me.
You know, your story blows me away. Your age blows me away even more, because for some reason I thought you were older. Not that you look older, it just you're a road warrior older, aren't you? You probably spent more time on the road than most of us that are double your age, triple your age.
Oh, definitely. Over the last 3 years, I've spent about 90% of that on the road, and there was about 1.5 years of that where I didn't even have a home.
So, yeah, I was thinking about asking this. How many nights in hotel rooms would you say you have?
Last year was exactly 300 nights.
Last year. That's crazy. And how many miles did you drive last year?
A hair over 49,000.
Are you kidding? So
that's enough to go around the earth twice.
So you've done that math.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. I had Jameson Filippi in town. He actually came into town, and we hung out for a couple of days. And he said you inspired him, you know, and that made him go out on the road. You have started kind of a craze. You're not the first, but you certainly have a lot of people that I see the comments where people are saying, you know, I just love what you're doing. You must be seeing some incredible things. And I want to get to all that. But first, I want to go back. What did you do before reselling?
Well, I was the director of marketing for a franchise of 4 dealerships. So I actually had a pretty good job, you know, company car, the whole works. But it just wasn't for me. I'd never liked working for someone. So I kind of started making a little side income, buying storage auctions, selling at the flea market, and over time decided to leave my job to do that full time.
How did you get into storage auction? Was it the Storage Wars show? You saw that and you saw that that looks kind of exciting?
I mean, I had seen the show before that, but what actually happened was I was just looking for stuff on Craigslist to flip, mostly back on Craigslist, and I found someone selling a full storage unit of furniture and stuff. And, you know, I thought, you know, I'll go check it out. I spent $175 on it. I sold it for $1,500 over the course of a week, which was just crazy money at the time for me. And I just kind of was hooked and wanted to see where can I find more storage units.
It blows my mind. Were you selling anything in high school or anything like that? Were you one of those kid entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Nothing too serious, but, you know, garage sales a couple times every summer and, you know, just finding stuff to flip here and there.
Okay, and you started selling on Craigslist. Did you move to eBay then?
Yeah, while I was doing storage auctions, you know, occasionally I'd find things like broken phones, and I think my first flip was actually on eBay was a whole bunch of BlackBerry phones that another flea market dealer told me would do much better on eBay, so I thought, what the heck, we'll try it out.
Now, a flea market seller, the ones by me, right, there's a flea market every Sunday mm-hmm. by me, and one time I went down there and sold one time, And I had to, the night before, I had to organize everything. I bought a DVD store. I bought the whole store. Mm-hmm. And I had all these DVDs, and we're all horror stuff or whatever. I'm like, oh, all right, I'm going to go down and make my fortune. And so send all the stuff to Amazon that I could, right? This was everything else. So I alphabetized them all the night before, the day before. And then we're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds that I brought with me. Then the next morning, I'm up at 3:30 in the morning or whatever, because I got to get down there and get a great spot, right? So then I'm down there, sitting in line, getting in. It's all dark. Set up the booth, whatever, and the heat starts. Once the sun comes up, the heat starts, and the dealers come by and want to give you nothing. You know, like I negotiate myself, so I could respect it, but the answer is no. And so I ended up cutting out about 11 o'clock. It got hot, and I got bored, and it was because I saw 30 other people selling DVDs, and I made $200. And I said to the guy next day, I sold $200. Oh, that's a great day. That's about what most of us get. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't work this hard for $200. I think I already had into it 20 hours, and I'm thinking, oh my God, $10 an hour, and I got to drive home. And it was experience for me. What was your experience like?
The numbers sound about right. On a bad day, I was doing 100 to 150. On a good day, I was doing 250, 300. But I didn't spend quite that much time. I'd show up in the morning, toss everything up on the table, sit there for 8, 10 hours just chatting with people. It was kind of fun. And, over the course of the weekend, make $400 or $500, which was about half my salary right there for, half a week or so.
And I get the cash aspect, and I get the attractiveness of all that. But then I went down because there was some other kind of show at this particular thing, and there was a tent, and it had all brand new merchandise. And I went and spent a couple $100, and I made a few $1,000s, and I sent it all to Amazon. And it was like, okay, so I could spend that much time and make $200, or I could go down here. And that's a true story, and it blew me away. To know that, okay, there's another thing I don't want to do.
Right. And at the time, I didn't know Amazon FBA existed. I didn't even know there were other companies selling on Amazon. I was barely familiar with eBay, so my options were basically sell on Craigslist or sell at the flea market, and I don't want to sit on Craigslist selling a $3 to $5 item. Those were flea market sales all day. Obviously, going back, I'm selling on FBA. I'm putting up insane numbers compared to that, and I wouldn't lift a finger for $150, $200 now. But it was a different
knowing
time.
What you know now. Yeah, knowing what you know now. Now, you have weather issues where you're at too, right? So what did you do to deal with that?
Well, back when I was doing the flea market, I actually lived down in North Carolina where you could pretty much sell at the flea market year-round. It wouldn't get much colder than 40 or 50 degrees in the wintertime during the day, which I know to some of you that sounds really cold, but to me that's about 100 degrees warmer than my winters. So
where you live now?
Yeah.
Where you're in Wisconsin.
Yep, the frozen tundra.
What led you to get up to Wisconsin?
I'm actually originally from Wisconsin, so kind of just going home.
Just kind of going home. Okay, I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to hear about the road warrior, the travels, some of the things that you've seen. We'll be right back.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com. For more information, that's SellerEssentials.com.
Man, what a great guy. Really smart. Again, he's only 24 years old. So when you sit back and you think about that, imagine where he's going to be a few years from now. Very smart, very logical, very very solid, just a solid approach. I really, and I mentioned this in the podcast, we talk about liquidation that he's buying and how his attitude and approach, again, I come back to what Matt Kelly says. If you bought it at the right price, you could ride it all the way down to worst case break even. Anything that you can do in business where the worst case scenario is you break even,
You're way ahead. I mean, you just figured it out. You're going to be nothing but successful. And there's no question in my mind, John will be successful. But, you know, I also appreciate the fact that he gives as much as he gets. He puts a lot of information, a lot of content out there. He's not making money at it. He's just doing it kind of to track his journey, but he's helping a lot of people along the way. And I think that's just great. Let's get back into the podcast.
All right, we're back and we're talking with John Dugan, a.k.a. Resale Rabbit on YouTube, who actually documented a lot of his travels around the country. And it was just so interesting to me because I noticed that you buy and sell a lot of used electronics. Would you say that that's really your specialty?
Absolutely. Especially when I'm traveling, you can't beat the margins of going into a thrift store, spending $3 on an alarm clock and selling it for $100. You'll never find those margins anywhere else.
Do you get to the point now, knowing what you know, that when you go in, you know right where to go for the easy pickings or the best pickings, and B, the stuff that you don't even have to look up because you've sold it 4, 5, 6 times?
Absolutely. I was actually at a flea market in Houston about a year ago with a viewer, a person in the green room who I talked to here and there, and he followed me around. He was new into reselling. And he watched me just grab, I think it was a modem off of a table, and I asked the guy how much he wants for it. And I didn't even look it up. I just paid for it and told him, I'm going to make $100 right here. And he was just amazed that I don't even need to look it up.
Now, do you test it in that scenario if you can?
Typically, with a margin that high on an item that typically doesn't break, I won't test it. Now, if it was like a video game system, I would try to test it. If I'm getting it cheap enough and I can't test it, then I'd take the risk.
What percentage would you say, because let's just assume most of it's not tested, what percentage do you end up taking a hit on?
A very small percentage, really. Most of the stuff I buy works.
Yeah, most of it, right? So generally, I even think a lot of the, especially the Goodwills of the world, those places, they actually test it themselves and just plug it in or whatever to make sure it goes, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think you're right. Another thing I noticed is you're not intimidated by price, right? If the deal is good, you're taking the deal. I mean, you'll spend $50 to make $200?
Absolutely. I would spend $2,000 to make $5,000. It's all about the margins, not the buy cost, in my opinion.
And at that point, you really, you know, you were traveling, you didn't have a home. And so were you buying things for eBay at all or no?
My very first trip on the road, I sold solely on eBay, and that was a nightmare. And eventually I did merchant fulfilling on Amazon on that trip, and that was also a nightmare because you really need to factor the size of the item when you buy it and how fast it's going to sell because you're storing it in your car until it's sold. And then there was,
yeah, it's not like you're driving this giant van, right? You're not driving a big giant van.
It's a minivan, a typical minivan. It's not like it's a semi-truck or anything like that. So I have storage space, but it fills up quick. And then there were other times where I would sell something on Amazon or eBay, and I cannot find it for the life of me in the van. So I'd have to either cancel the order or buy it from another seller and have it shipped to the buyer. And that just became problematic after a while.
So 300 days, 300 nights in hotels last year. Is there you must have slept in some pretty nice places and some pretty not so nice places. Agreed?
Agreed.
Do you go with a plan or is it all price driven?
It's mostly price driven. Now that I'm making more money, I will pay up a little more. I was actually in a hotel in St. Louis about 3 weeks ago, and this is a typical, you know, trashy roadside motel, a lot of riffraff outside. And I just kind of sat there thinking, you know, I made like $1,200 profit today. I can afford to spend up to $90 on a room instead of cheaping out on the $30, $40 rooms.
$30 and $40. Oh, my God. I couldn't imagine. A bed and a Bible, as my wife would say.
Yeah.
So do you look at it as a percentage of sales? I mean, is that now the way you're thinking about it? Is, you know, I can afford to spend, you know, 10% for travel expenses? Or was there a formula like that?
No, there's really no formula. It used to be just get the cheapest thing possible that probably won't give me bed bugs. But now I'm looking for something that has a little bit more comfort. Some cities, like Shreveport, Louisiana, I can stay in a 4-star, absolutely beautiful place for $50. Whereas you go to cities like Miami, where that $50, I barely find a hostel. I'll spend $75 on a roach motel. So it really depends on the city and kind of how I'm feeling, but I'm typically looking for, you know, a 3-star Holiday Inn Express type hotel at the minimum.
Okay, and they're, you know, the most you'll pay in a place like that is $200, right? At most, even in New York City, well, in the outer areas, that's what I've seen. So I understand that. Do you have a plan, like each day, knowing that I'm going to need, do you approach it in a planned way? Okay, I need to get housing by such and such a time. Like I remember Steve Rakin saying that he uses, I think it's Hotwire, and he would use that, you know, schedule the next day. I think it's Hotwire. You schedule it the next or that night, but you got to order it at a certain time. Is that the right one?
Yeah, I used to use Hotwire, and I swear if I got a percentage of every sale I brought into Hotwire, I got so many people to use that company, I don't even use them anymore. But most of the hotel's third-party sites, you can only book up until midnight local time. So typically, you know, that's my deadline, midnight. After midnight, okay. I would need to actually physically go into the hotel, and I'm paying retail rates. So, you know, if I have to, I'll do it, but I try to do it on the third-party site.
Wait, you're renting the room by midnight the same night?
Mm-hmm.
Or the next?
The same night.
I'm an old man. 9 o'clock, I'm in bed. I couldn't take it. Well, you know, that's interesting. So your schedule, you know, what time are you getting up in the morning?
Right before checkout.
Oh, which is what, 10, 11?
About 10 or 11, yeah.
Okay, so you're a night person.
Absolutely. I do my best work after 10 o'clock.
I saw your exploits recently where you were missing breakfast quite a bit. And I'm wondering, I'm like, what time is he getting up? But now it makes sense if you're staying up so late. So how does it feel driving with that much windshield time? I mean, is it, you know, is your back bother? I mean, you getting out every couple hours, or is it because you're so young you don't hurt yet?
It really varies, but trust me, after 6 hours without getting out of the car, I am sore. I am walking with a limp. But, you know, you get used to it after a while. I remember a couple years ago, the idea of a 6-hour drive was absolutely miserable. And now the idea of a 6-hour drive, I'm like, oh, that's nothing. I can do that with my eyes closed.
I just saw something come up in somebody's Facebook where there's a way you can travel the whole U.S. and where it's 70 degrees everywhere you go in the U.S. and it takes you on this route all the way through the country. I'm like, ooh, now that would be interesting. You're always in 70-degree weather. I'm like, that would be a way. How did you approach the travel? I mean, were you going for family events and holidays and then working your way back to where you are and looking at places to go?
Not so much. I just go towards the events. If there's a professional football game that I want to see in another city, I'll go there. Or, you know, I like going to the Detroit Auto Show every year, so I'm always in Detroit in January, unfortunately. But it really just kind of stemmed from that, and, you know, I wanted to explore new cities that might not have an event, and I just kind of go where the wind takes me, I guess you could say.
How many states have you been in?
Right now, let me think. I had this in my head a little bit ago. 42 states.
No kidding. So to be a young guy who's seen 42 states, you obviously want to get to all 50,
absolutely,
right? Just it's a bucket list item, right? You got to check that off.
Yep.
Have you done any sourcing in Canada or Mexico?
I actually did a little light sourcing in Canada. I didn't go up there to source, but I just happened to be at a Target, I don't know, a year or two ago, and I figured, you know what, I'm going to scan some stuff. I picked up a couple of cameras on clearance, and I realized I'm paying an ungodly amount of money for my phone since I'm roaming out of the country, so I stopped.
I don't know whether the Wi-Fi would – I don't know how that would work because Target's Wi-Fi is sketchy anyway, whether it would work in Canada with the phone company and give you the data that you want. I don't know, and especially a couple of years ago, who knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Were you chasing weather also?
Oh, absolutely. I was actually in San Francisco for the Super Bowl in February, and there are a lot of resellers up in Oregon who really wanted me to come visit. And I'd never been to Oregon, so it was very tempting, but it was also February, so I ended up going south instead.
So you really went towards your lifestyle, right? If you didn't have anybody to account for, you're not married. Is there a significant other, and did they travel with you at all?
Nope. Years ago, I was in a relationship with a woman, and we traveled quite a bit. But, you know, it's really tough to maintain relationships when you're on the road 300 nights per year, and, you know, most people have jobs, and they can't just, you know, up and quit their job to go on the road with me, so it becomes difficult to date.
Yeah, that would be a little speed dating. It might work. I mean, just a different date in each town. What's the longest you stayed in a given place?
I guess you could say Nashville, Tennessee. I was driving through Nashville last June or July, and I was just so sick of traveling. I was getting burnt out, so I actually got an apartment, and I had the apartment for 6 months. I ended up staying in there for, at the longest, I think about a month and a half.
And then you get stir crazy and you have to go.
Yep.
Is it now in your nature? I mean, is there anything holding you back? Are you the guy that'll be like, somebody's like, hey, do you want to go to San Francisco this weekend to see blah, blah, blah? Are you in?
Typically, that's who I am. But I just got a warehouse up here in Wisconsin. I'm hiring a couple of employees. So it's kind of keeping me grounded for at least 6 months while I get that going. But my hope is to get that relatively hands off so I can get back on the road.
Well, I'm interested to understand why you're moving to that model, but I just want to make sure I get the rest of what I was thinking about with your travel, because I think there's an attractiveness to it. It's a very free model, correct? I mean, mm-hmm. It's completely free, right? There is no place you can't buy items. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Right? Every town you've been to, there's always something to buy, right?
Absolutely.
Every town you've been to or the next town – you can ship from, correct?
Yes.
You can deal with customer service from every town?
Correct.
You can deal with your online banking and bills and all that kind of jazz?
Absolutely. I can pretty much run my business in any way from any city, big or small, within the lower 48 U.S. states.
I think the only issue would be is returns. Where are they going to? So, you know, I've suggested somebody was like, oh, what would I do with them? I'm like, first off, you get a legal address, which I recommend at a UPS store where they have a suite or a box number. It's not like a P.O. box where you can't receive boxes at a post office. My UPS store actually receives pallets for me. So it depends on what town you're in. But you can buy rent. It's $180 a year for a legal street address, which is recognized, at least in my state, as a legal street address. And you can actually put your corporation name there, and all your bills will come there. They'll actually open your mail for you and forward it for you. You can do all that. You pay fees, but you can do all those things. What do you do with your returns prior to the warehouse?
I would just have them go to somebody's house. I would basically pay someone a couple of bucks a month to accept packages for me.
And okay, so a friend or family?
Yep, and it would sit there in their garage until I got back.
Okay, so one of the things that Jameson told me, which was really interesting, is that he would order supplies and have them shipped to the next place he was going, to a friend or the next area he's going. How did you handle that?
I've actually only had to order supplies once, and it was just in a pinch. I usually try to plan most of my supplies where I can buy them locally or have enough in the van with me. I ordered supplies once when I ran out of labels, and the UPS store actually did accept it. They'll accept shipments from any carrier without actually having a box there or anything. It's just $5 per shipment, and they call you when it arrives.
Oh, that's very cool, though. That's a pro tip. So you're saying that no matter what town you're in, as long as you go to them in advance, right, probably, mm-hmm. and set it up with them, you would say, hey, I'm expecting a package, blah, 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 blah. Here's my contact information. You would have it shipped to their address, right? You'd ask them for their address. That would help the shipping company.
Yep.
And boom, they contact you. You can go pick it up. That's a pro tip. I never knew that. I know how it works, like I said, in my town. But the fact that you could do that anywhere in the country, that's a game changer for a lot of people. Because that's one of the things, you know, poly bags, I think, would be a good example. Mm-hmm. They're very difficult to buy locally. Agreed?
Agreed.
How did you get around that when you had a problem?
They're small enough where I can keep them in the van with me.
Okay, so you just have to have enough with you. You did not run out ever?
No, never.
Okay, because you could end up using weird Ziploc bags, because every so often I get shoes and they're in those big giant Ziploc bags, but it's not the same. I mean, it's just really not the same as a self-seal or something of decent quality with the warning labels. I guess you could just print them off and put them on. In a pinch, I tell the story that we went to a road trip and my printer would not work, and so I ended up going to Walmart buying a printer for $40. And, you know, using that right then and there worked instantly. Have you had any of those experiences where you just had to go and get new equipment and just boom, make it work?
Not so much. Usually my equipment, I buy quality stuff where I can just beat the heck out of it and it still works. Although I did just break my phone the other day. About a week ago, I dropped it at a gas station in Georgia and just shattered the screen. Thankfully, I keep another iPhone 6 in the car with me so I can swap them out in a pinch.
So that's another tip, right? So you just move over and you're ready to go.
Yep. When I upgraded my phone, I kept, rather than selling the old one, I kept it to use just as an emergency backup.
And boom, it worked. Mm-hmm. Now, before the warehouse, you're still buying everything for FBA, no merchant fulfill, no nothing.
Correct.
So now you cycle to a warehouse in Wisconsin, and this is now, do you have an official home up there now?
Yes, I actually had a home here since like November of last year, but I spent like a week there total until April. So
what was your thinking about getting the warehouse? What are you going to get that you're missing now?
Truckloads. My goal is to be buying truckloads of liquidation and eventually truckloads of wholesale, which is very difficult to get 26 pallets delivered to your house.
Yeah, no, that's definitely difficult. I watched your travails with the first truckloads that you received, right? So what I appreciated, and this is my observation, is that you were smart enough to buy it at the right price. So even after all the tuition of learning, you're basically, your comment was you think you might break even.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine the education you just got and you didn't lose a dime. Now, you lost some time. Somebody will say, well, it'll cost something in time, but go to school. You're paying to go to school. In this scenario, you got paid to learn something or didn't pay. It was free, in essence, other than your time. You got a great education of what not to buy. I loved your tips about what not to buy, the lessons that you learned.
Absolutely.
Clues that you had, right? So, you know, you had since purchased another shipment, right? I saw it was office supplies, I think, mm-hmm. your second shipment. Do you think you'll fare any better in this scenario?
Absolutely. I have one product I paid $7,500 for this entire shipment, and there's one item that is worth $3,500 alone. And then I've got another SKU. There are 480 units that is a number one rank on Amazon, and I'll get about $10 each after fees, so that's another $4,800 that'll take a day or two to sell. So I'm doing much better on this load. It's already almost cleared out, and I have another one being delivered this week.
Did you, the learning also in the processing, because I imagine you're pretty efficient processing on the road, right? You got that down to a science, right? You know right where to park, you know what floor to get your room on, you know all the tips, right? I've had some people on and they say, hey, try to get a first floor room, try to get near a door or an entrance close to where your cars can be parked, grab the luggage or the is it a portable valet, whatever they call those, to bring in your merchandise, right? Prep, boom, bring it out the next day. What's different about the warehouse? What have you thought it was going to be, and what have you already fixed and changed in the second shipment versus the first?
Well, when I started the warehouse, I already had an employee working for me that was trained to do FBA shipments. So that was a huge advantage. I can be processing the pallets and digging through them while she does the shipments.
Well, wait, stop there, because that's interesting to me. So you had hired her, and you were buying stuff and bringing it back or sending it to her for prepping?
Yeah, I was buying it, and she would literally come and work out of my garage, sending it to Amazon, all my retail arbitrage and thrift store shipments. And sometimes she would come on short road trips with me to do the work out of a hotel room. So now that I've got the warehouse, I told her that I would hire her on full-time rather than just a part-time basis.
How long did you train her for? Because I think that's a smart idea. I mean, honestly, I've not heard anybody say this before, and I think this is really smart. So how long did you train her for?
Honestly, it didn't take long. She's a very quick learner. I actually tested her on the very first shipment she did. I was just handing her labels for the products because she was just, she didn't know what she was doing. And I had two identical shirts of two different sizes, everything else the same. And I purposefully handed her the label for the wrong size just to see if she would catch it, and she caught it.
Oh, that's great. So she pays attention to details. What other traits did you find with her that have really started to really flow for you?
She's a very quick learner. She works long hours. Like, we got two trucks within 4 days of each other, so we had to get the warehouse full and then emptied out again. So she happily works the long hours when I need her. She works hard, close attention to detail. All around, she's a great employee.
Do you think she has the ability to work by herself?
She has been working by herself the last couple of weeks. I've been just dropping stuff off, you know, pulling boxes out and just leaving it there and letting her handle that all on her own.
So she's entering them, printing the labels, putting the labels on, bag tagging, whatever it is, filling the boxes, getting the boxes labeled, ready to go. Are you receiving UPS, or is UPS picking them up, or are you taking them to UPS?
Oh, right now we're taking them to UPS, but that's okay. Going to change very quickly.
But she can still do all that. So, you know, really, you get to do the best part, which is what you love, is buying, mm-hmm. right? And you can hand off that other piece. I love the idea, before you took on the expense of the warehouse, you had somebody trained, because that means day one, when the product gets there, you're working. You're not, there's no downtime, there's no learning curve, there's no, you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. The setup, I noticed that you had some temporary tables and stuff like that put up, because you'll get to that when you get to it, right?
Right.
I think it's smart, too, is that you weren't worried about having everything right before you launched, right? Because you could work out of your garage, as you said, mm-hmm. you were. So really, all of a sudden, you just move to another space. You need electricity and either fans, AC, or heat in the winter. In your case, it's probably getting cold up there already. It's almost winter there.
Oh, not quite. We got another couple weeks.
Yeah, you got about 2 more weeks, but, and that'll be winter.
Funny story about getting everything situated. I had the cable company set up to come in on a Monday to do the internet, and they came in Monday and told me that they weren't going to do it Monday. They were just evaluating the space, and it wouldn't be done until the following week. Well, I had to get mm-hmm. the warehouse emptied out because I had another shipment coming in before then, so I literally called my cell phone company, had them set up a hotspot on my phone, and for the first week, we ran the internet out of this warehouse off of my cell phone.
Now, how much did it cost you?
$20.
How difficult was the internet connection? Was it difficult?
The connection wasn't bad. It was a little slower than normal, but it was definitely doable. Our biggest challenge was the fact that it was my personal cell phone, so I physically needed to be there for her to be using it. You know, obviously, I need to take my phone home with me at night. So it made it problematic when I wasn't there. She had to find something to do.
Hmm. I love it, though. Again, overcoming obstacles. I interviewed a woman by the name of Barbara Drazga, and she had received a big shipment. It was going to rain, and she was like, what am I going to do? She went out and rented another truck and backed the truck up to the tractor trailer, and they just moved the pallets between the two. Most people would have given up and saying, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Or went and rented a giant warehouse or whatever. It's that innovative, it's that ability to adapt, which is going to drive your success. So I love it. I think that's a great tip. So get a hotspot. Now, I mean, you had a second phone, so if you didn't shatter your other one, you could have made that work too,
yeah.
Right? Okay, but that's a great tip. You could use that as a B plan, and it's a great B plan to have in place. You should test it. If you don't, because your internet can come down, your power can go down, as long as you got a cell signal and a generator or something like that, you could – keep going. Do you have a backup generator? Have you thought about those things yet?
I've thought about it in, you know, my entire life. I've lived in Green Bay about 2/3 of it, and we've never once had a power outage. The infrastructure up here is very good, so I'm not too concerned about that. If it did go down, I'm sure I could figure out a way to make it work.
Okay. Now let's talk about you're doing right now liquidation. Have you bought any Amazon liquidation direct from Amazon yet?
Not since I got the warehouse. However, I have purchased pallets before, just individual pallets from local dealers that were Amazon liquidation.
Okay, so they're buying the tractor trailer loads and splitting up the pallets and saying, here's one, here's one, here's one.
Mm-hmm.
How does that fare for you? Because, you know, I guess the thing that doesn't scare you, you sell used electronics. That was your main business, correct?
Correct.
So you getting a pallet of electronics, not intimidating to you?
Not at all.
Do you find that your returns, because people know that they're used, you don't get as many inauthentic claims? And you see that stuff out there, right? People saying, hey, I'm getting inauthentic claims and that kind of thing. Because you're selling it used, I wondered, does that impact that at all?
Well, I have sold over 10,000 units on Amazon since I started on Amazon. I've never once had an inauthentic claim.
Okay. So I just want to all think about that because, you know, I have some really sophisticated listeners who are very smart. And so selling used like new, is that typically the way you sell them, used like new?
It's used very good. I rarely call something like new because I like to drop it one condition lower than I think it is, so the customer will be pleasantly surprised.
Okay, so there's another pro tip. How low do you price it versus the buy box? So let's say a particular item is selling used at $50. What would you price that at? Now, because you're going down basically two grades, I guess used like new would be the first grade somebody would have. Or so you're going down one grade because I guess it's used. So you're down one grade. How much would you normally price it below the buy box, or would you?
Well, typically what I'm going to do is I'm going to find the, if it's a used product, I'm going to look for the lowest used FBA offer and match that. There are certain circumstances where it might have a really good rank and there's a wide gap between the first and second offer where I'll match the second. But for the most part, I'm just matching, and that kind of makes it a little easier to have an employee just say match the lowest.
Okay, so when it says used is $50, you're putting it at the same regardless of what they called it. They could call it used like new. You don't care.
Correct.
You know yours is – and are you ever selling acceptable grade items?
Yeah, it happens quite often actually, especially with video games. I will sell games where it's the disc only without the case. I'll put it in a generic case, and that would, of course, be considered acceptable.
Okay, and so there's no artwork, just the disc. Plain, probably. Do you have to bag those? I've never sold acceptable or stuff without a case.
Well, I will put it in a generic DVD case, and then I like to bag all of my DVD and video game cases that are used because I think it looks better than tape.
Do you take image pictures of yours?
No, I've never taken a photo.
Okay, because I've heard people say, "Hey, take a picture and it sells better," that kind of thing. So, in acceptable, are you matching the acceptable?
No, I'm matching the lowest used. Even if the new lowest is like new with the cover art and everything, I'm still going to match it.
The lowest or the highest?
The lowest used FBA offer.
Okay. So I mean, because maybe I messed up the other one. So when I said it was $50, the buy box for used, you would go to the lowest, even though your condition was similar to that?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't just match the $50. You're going down to whatever the lowest price is. And so, oh, that's interesting. Well, so you're right in line to sell almost immediately.
Yeah, the lowest FBA offer. So I will be higher than merchant fulfilled offers, but I'm all about turn and burn. I would rather take the quick nickel over the slow dime and get it in and out.
If there's no FBA offers used, what are you pricing it?
That's a case-to-case basis, and that's something where I struggle to train my employee to figure that out, because if it's got a really good rank, I'm just going to go crazy and double it. You know, if the lowest merchant fulfilled offer used is 50, I'll price it at 100, and I have sold things with those exact numbers before. If it's a slower moving rank, I might just match the merchant fulfilled or bump it up by a few dollars. Sometimes I'll check price history on Keepa or Camel, Camel, Camel. It's really case-to-case basis for me on that.
Now, are you using inventory placement for your inventory, or are you letting them tell you where to send it?
I only use it when I'm on the road because I'm sending smaller shipments and it's more efficient. But when I'm home, I turn it off. I go to the distributed inventory placement, because it will go direct to the fulfillment center rather than a distribution center, which will send it out, and my stuff will check in and be ready for sale quicker.
That's another pro tip. So because you have the labor help, I mean, doing it yourself, there's a limit because you can only process so much, you can only do so much. But having that additional labor where they're not involved in the buying, so they're all they're really doing is processing for you, that gives them a heck of a lot more time, right, mm-hmm. and energy and focus. So that's a great tip, is that you could – you know, the amount of money you save, right, you know, I think it's, what, 35 cents or whatever it is.
20.
20 cents. And so you could save quite a bit of that person's salary if you're sending in a few thousand items a week very quickly by doing that. And like you say, you're going to get the benefit of it selling that much faster.
Absolutely. My last huge shipment was about 650 items. So I just did the math here on the calculator on my phone. At 20 cents per unit, that would be $130. That's basically a little over a day's salary for my employee.
I didn't ask you what you pay her. I don't know if you're comfortable in saying that, but could you give us a range of what you pay somebody? Is it hour? Well, maybe you don't even have to do that. How about, is it hourly only, or is there some kind of incentive built in?
Right now it's only hourly. Once I have somebody who will manage the warehouse and manage employees, I will probably do a salary and a profit share with it. But for the person that my current employee who just does listing, or if I have someone who does eBay or testing or sorting, they'll just be a flat hourly.
Okay. Here's a tip for if you're going to do a profit sharing, make sure that you have a standard administrative fee built into everything. So that way you know what the cost is. Say it's $2.20 an item or whatever, and that covers your rent, your warehouse, your salary, your taxes, your insurances, and those things. Mm-hmm. And when you have that standard model, it's so easy for a person to calculate what it is. Do you share your sales with the employee?
Yes, she has full access to my Amazon account.
Do you thinking of Max Abreu. He was telling me that one of their cool things they do is they have targets and they put it up on the wall, how many items they ship in a day, and just trying to hit, you know, set targets to see if they could beat themselves and do a little better each day. And they post it up on the wall in a big whiteboard or whatever, and to just keep people inspired. Now it's hard, it's just you and her, but as you grow, it might be something you consider. How quickly do you plan to grow staff?
Relatively quickly. By the end of the year, I'd like to have 5 people working for me. And by the end of next year, I would ideally like to have the place open around the clock with 3 shifts.
And right now, you're not selling to the public in any way. It's only FBA or something else. You're either going to send it to auction or do something else with it?
For the most part, that was a major struggle that kind of hit me blindsided here. These pallets are coming in, and maybe only about 20% of it is good for Amazon. Now, I'll double, triple, quadruple my money on that 20%, but I've got a whole bunch of other stuff that can't be sent into Amazon. So I'm trying to find outlets where I don't have customers from Craigslist coming into my door every day. I would rather have a business who's going to put it in their store or an auction, just come pick it up. Where all I have to do is pick up the phone, say, hey, I've got 10 pallets for you, and they come get them.
Another model I've heard is somebody lets someone they relatively trust take it to your flea market, and they would sell it, and you split the money 50-50. Mm-hmm. So whatever they take in, they get half, and you get half. So there's no risk to them. They invest their time. Now, you got to have somebody who's relatively honest that you can kind of trust. That's another option too. Have you thought about a retail, liquidation building or something like that, or opening up for a once a month clearance sale?
Yeah, there's actually a big box store that closed about 3 blocks from my warehouse, and their building is for sale. So I've considered potentially buying that building maybe around Q1 next year and opening up some sort of outlet. Hire a store manager to run it and basically send all of my junk over there.
Tell me what you've learned now in the few years you've been selling, right? It's 3 years you've been selling. 5 years you've been selling.
Yes.
Correct. Sorry about that. 3 years on the road. But 5 years of selling all the way through. Looking back, what would you say are the top 3 things that you learned, 5 things you've learned, stuff that you could just you would tell yourself, your 20-year-old self, back when you're starting?
Give up control. That's the biggest thing. I sold on Amazon for 3 or 4 years, I think 3 years before I even sent in an FBA shipment, because I did not want to give up control. And my numbers went up tenfold when I started doing that. I was so hesitant to hire an employee because, again, I'm giving up control on pricing. And my numbers went up so much. I was hesitant to get a repricer because I might take a loss on 3 items a month, but the other 4,000 items or however many I end up selling are going to be selling so much faster. Just simply giving up control will make me more efficient, and I was always afraid to do that.
What else would you say that you've learned? So giving up control for those reasons, you know, using FBA because it, you know, as you said, it gives you 10 times the employees, right? You're paying higher cost, mm-hmm. but you hired how many X employees? Whatever it takes, really. Whatever you send in, you hired enough employees to process that,
right.
No matter what. So that's pretty cool. Repricer, I get too, and then get your local helper. What else would you say that you've learned?
I've learned to stop trying to compete with other people and compete with yourself. I used to, you know, look in the Facebook groups, you see people posting these big numbers that dwarf my numbers. And I would always be like, well, what do I need to do to get to those numbers or those numbers? I'd see people post 100K a month, and I'd try and figure out how to get to those numbers. When I'm not seeing their business model or how they got there, what I should be doing instead, and what I've learned to do, is compare myself to me last month, last week, last year.
I think it's very smart. I think the other thing you're going to do as you get older is you're going to say, here's where I want to get to. Not because I want to say I'm selling $1 million, because that's a male ego thing, right? It's the size thing. Who cares? You want to get to the place where you want to get to. So if you want to make X number of dollars a year, you can algebraically back into it and say, this is what I need to you know, have out in the market because my sell-through rate is this and blah, 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 blah. That's one of the things that I don't see a lot of people doing. Although recently I see more people talking about, I want to get to X profit, which I think is a very smart way to run your business. And what does it take to get X profit? Well, if you know your numbers, you can work your way backwards. And then you could sit back and say, okay, maybe my number is $42,500 in sales a month at, you know, 28% ROI, blah, 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 right? You can get to that. That's a much more bite-sized target. And then you can stay interested in what you sell, because I think, you know, I don't know how you are. I mean, you love electronics, I take it. That's your thing, right? You know it.
Absolutely.
Do you get as excited selling toothpaste? I understand that you'll sell toothpaste to make money. Don't get me wrong, and you love a deal, especially if you can buy a pallet of it. But it's not the same, is it?
Honestly, it's all the same to me. I just see the revenue coming in from it. I prefer to sell stuff that I don't like, because when I find something really cool, I am so tempted to put it in my house instead of send it to Amazon, which makes it very difficult. But at the end of the day, I just look at the numbers, and that's what makes me happy. You won't even believe the stuff that I've sold that I don't even know what it does or what it is.
Interesting. So now, as you get older, I get to this point in my life, I don't want any stuff. I got enough stuff. I want nothing. I want everything out of my life. I want to minimize my life. And it's interesting. So I only buy things that and I'll sell everything because I, like you, but I'm much more particular about what I buy because it's got to be interesting to me, or I'm just not, you know. The other thing I have is a hassle factor. With the warehouse, is there anything that you won't sell? Now, you're selling furniture, which is a big deal. I can't believe you're getting into that already, but I get it. I mean, I get it. You're setting yourself up where you can handle those bigger, higher-priced, higher-profit items, right? That higher average selling price means, if, as long as your margins are right, you've got a higher profit per item.
Absolutely. And I will send furniture straight to Amazon FBA. That doesn't bother me at all. The only things that I really won't sell are things that are very highly counterfeited, like brands like Beats by Dre, Coach, P90X, things of that nature.
Now, you're talking about getting into wholesale. Is that the next logical place for you?
Yes, it is. And that is something that I know very little about. So that is something that I will do everything that I can over the next year to learn about.
I think that's really smart. You know, I appreciate about your business is you did your time. You mean, you were on the road for 3 years, day in, day out, night in, night out. I'm sure you missed a ton of things, right? A ton of family events and those sacrifices for your own experiences, which I think is really cool. But you did your time. Now, you're now going to set up this, and you've clearly been successful. You had a great year last year. You made enough money. So now you're saying, okay, I want to start a real business with employees and that whole thing. I don't mean that your other business wasn't real. I don't mean it that way. But I love that you're ready to move into this next phase. Now, you mentioned earlier on that you think that you'll go back out on the road.
Yeah.
What would take to trigger that? What will be, you know, do you have a list of stuff that you'll say you want all these boxes checked, or if most of them are checked, what would they be?
Basically, what needs to happen is I need to hire someone who can be me, someone who can order the trucks, who can process through them, who can manage the employees, where I don't need to physically be here every day. And that was my goal from the start, to hire a second John to be here. Once that happens, then I can go out on the road and I don't need to worry about the warehouse burning down every day.
Well, what's that person going to have, that skill set? What is the skill set that you think they're going to need?
Honestly, there is no special skill set. I don't think I'm special in any way. I think everything I know can be easily trained.
Do you think that if somebody said, one of your close friends or one of your acquaintances, would they, if they described you at your skill set, what would they be?
Ambitious, hardworking, I guess. You know, I'm in here for the last 2 weeks. I've been in the warehouse every day, 7 days a week. There was one day I worked 19 hours. I was here from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed.
So you're going to be successful, period. You're going to work your way through it no matter what. And it's not been easy, right? I'm sure you've run into problems.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone has.
Right. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. That's always the thing. So those would be your strengths. What would you say – what would they say are your weaknesses?
I think my biggest weakness is handling the logistics, figuring out how everything will flow. Like if I walk out into my warehouse right now and I look at my assistant who's doing all the listing, I look at her work area, it's an absolute mess. And I know it's very inefficient, and I have no idea how to make it more efficient. So that's probably my biggest weakness. I really need to sit down and watch her work and try and figure out what we can do to make it more efficient.
You know, here's a little piece of advice. Bring somebody who's already got that done, and it'll be so obvious to them, and they'll be like, you didn't think of this or that. And ultimately, that's the way you're going to get more successes, by being around other people who have already done it, and then you contribute too.
Mm-hmm.
So next is back out on the road. What's next after that?
I guess I haven't really thought that far out. Retirement, maybe. My goal is to be retired by 30, which is 6 years from now, 5.5 years from now. So,
and that's a financial target?
That's a financial target, yes.
And what does retirement look for the Resale Rabbit? Because you got a name, so you're going to have to live up to it. So is the name going to change to Traveling Turkey? I don't know. I'm coming up with something.
We'll figure something out when we get to that bridge. But basically, I've got a number in mind, and once I hit that number, I can theoretically close up the warehouse and stop working. Now, since I have a warehouse and everything will be relatively self-sufficient, will I shut it down? Probably not. Why shut down a successful business that requires little on my part? But that's when I can officially say I'm retired, at the very least.
You know, I hope people, I get a lot of really heavy experienced sellers, and they're going to be like, oh, this is great, and this is very similar strategy. But I also get a lot of brand new sellers. So I'm thinking that you're probably a very good example of somebody who probably started with very little money,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the model that you're using, you're buying things at a very discounted price, correct?
Correct.
So very little bit of money, but with the heart of with some adventure in his heart. What's your advice for that new seller coming out? What would you say to them? Hey, these are probably three or four of the absolutes that you really want to keep in mind, because it's not easy. Somebody last night was messaging me, and I was helping them with something, and they're like, oh, this sounds great and easy. I'm like, no, there's nothing easy about this. Everybody makes it look easy, but that's, 5 years of selling. You can walk into a store and pick something off the shelf without even scanning it. But that took you 5 years to get there. That's not easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's 60 months of hard work. So it's not easy to scale to a successful level. So start somebody off. What's your advice?
I have two big pieces of advice for a new seller. Number one, find someone who is on your level, who is brand new just like you, and learn together. You'd be surprised how much you can learn just by kind of talking back and forth with someone who's on your same level. And number two, when you go into the store, scan everything. I don't care if it's only marked down a couple dollars. I don't care if it's an item that you couldn't imagine selling, an item that you wouldn't even want yourself. You can't imagine someone buying it. Scan it anyways, because you'll be surprised what people are willing to buy and what they're willing to pay.
It's great advice.
5 years in, I'm still regularly amazed at what people pay for things.
And you're still finding things you've never sold before. You're like, what is this, right?
Every day I find something new.
So Resale Rabbit on YouTube, what's the goal of your YouTube channel?
Honestly, that's just a little side hobby of mine. I've actually spent more money on my YouTube channel than I've made on it. I just enjoy, putting the videos together and everything. It's fun. It's it's a helpful tool to new sellers, and I do enjoy helping people, because when I started, there were no Facebook groups or YouTube channels at my disposal. So
I think your grandkids someday will love looking back at it, because it really is going to be how I started. You've done a documentary of yourself in that way, right? You've documented your beginnings,
mm-hmm.
and it's very cool. And I think someday your grandkids will look back and say, "Are you kidding me? You actually drove a car for stuff." That'll probably be a big deal, right? You actually drove the car, and you drove in it for 6 hours when you could have been there in 48 seconds with our new whatever button they push, right? In the future. So, All right, very cool. Somebody has questions or looking for advice, are you approachable?
Yeah, the easiest way to get a hold of me is to find me on Facebook. Look up Resale Rabbit. I've got a page on there. Shoot me a message, and I check that just about every day.
And then are you out on – and then I'll have a link for your YouTube channel, of course. Any other places that you're putting your content out on?
No, it's really just Facebook and YouTube. I do put a lot more content in the Green Room, which is a group run by Bonafide Hustler, Rake and Profit, Retro Aficionado, and the College Picker. I definitely put a lot more content in there, but if you're not in the Green Room, you can still find a lot on Facebook and YouTube.
And I'll have a link for the Green Room. It's a paid group, which I'm a member, and it's a great group of people. And it's if you're looking – if this kind of life excites you, if this is interesting to you and this is different than a lot of the other people that I've interviewed, right, it's more of that free spirit kind of adventure. There are several people like John out there doing very similar things, traveling, even if it's in their small community, and doing these things and still going to Goodwills and things, because that is the most inexpensive way to get started in this business. Agreed.
And in the Green Room, you mentioned Jameson Phillippe. He did an interview with you recently. He travels just as much as I do and posts a lot more than I do in the Green Room. One might say he drifts through the air like a plastic bag.
It's a very good description of him. I did my carpool interview with him. It was very interesting over a couple of days. So, John, I appreciate you taking the time. I wish you nothing but success. I can't wait to see how it goes. I think you're set yourself up for success. You clearly have thought this through. I think it sounds like it's still fun for you, which is a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal. How many of your high school and college friends still love what they do, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Not many.
And so – no, and yours is a new adventure every day. And I just love the way that you've thought it through and the tips that you gave. I wish you nothing but success. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Man, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Again, what I appreciate about his business is he's figured out this segment. Boom, now he moves up a whole plane. He just moves up like a whole block. That foundation was built. Now he's putting that second tier or third tier in his case. And again, I just think that's such a smart way to run your business. There are so many distractions. Don't fall into them. Master what you're doing before you move on. Then move up, but applying what you learned along the way, and you're going to have nothing but success. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.